Parshas Be'akel for today is really the culmination of a dream that Klal Yisrael had of leaving Mitzrayim, of building a home for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The planning, the instructions, the creation, and eventually how everything was put together, and how put together is described in this week's parashas in length to show us the importance of it and to show us the incredible dedication of how each thing was done exactly according to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be done and exactly with the machshavas and the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected it to happen with. But there was one particular person who stood out in this week's parasha and the parasha of the building of the Mishkan that was absolutely outstanding. The Gemara talks about it in Sanhedrin, and the Gemara says that Bezalel was a young boy. He was 13 years old. There was actually, the Gemara talks about it that his great grandfather was Chur. In other words, they gave birth when they were 9 or 10, and they had very, very short generations between they were all born. He worked out otherwise it would be possible for him to be at that age. The whole Gemara talks about it in Perek Ben Sleira Meir. But be that as it may, Bezalel was 13 years old. A young man. Okay? Bezalel was not only, good with his hands. The Chazal say that Bezalel was able to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu down from the Olam HaSelyonus, or Pi Kabbalah, taking the letters that Hashem created the world and put that into the physical being and create a product that allows HaKadosh Baruch Hu to dwell in this world with Derech HaKabbalah. In other words, he was the ultimate Mekubal that was able to take the letters and create a tapestry of Kabbalah that will allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kedusha and Shechina to rest on a physical being. An unbelievable and incredible young man. The way the parasha describes him, though, requires investigation. The parasha says like this, in Perek Lamed Hei Posuk Lamed. Now, some of this we mentioned last year, but I want to focus very much on an idea and take it all the way through to its conclusion, understanding exactly where we are in this picture. Perek Lamed Hei Posuk Lamed. Vayomer Moshe al Bnei Yisrael. Moshe said to Bnei Yisrael, Re'u, see, have a look. Korah Hashem, Hashem has called B'Shem Bezalel Ben Uri Ben Chur Lamat Yehuda. Hashem has called out Bezalel Ben Uri, the son of Uri, Ben Chur, the son of Chur, Lamat Yehuda, to the tribe of Yehuda. Now, so who do we have here? We have Bezalel. The father was Uri. The grandfather was Chur. And the Shevet of Yehuda. Carries on Rashi. And Rashi throws another generation in. Not enough that we know who Bezalel's father was and grandfather was. Says Rashi, who was Chur? Benosha Miriam Hoyo. He was the son of Miriam. Was. Okay? We'll see soon. Was meaning past tense. He was the son of Miriam. So here we have now another generation. You have Miriam in here. So now we have Miriam in the equation as well. Just in case you don't know who Bezalel is, you know Bezalel ben Uri? No. Ben Chur? Ben Miriam. So what's this idea? Why have so many generations? What's the idea over here? Just say Bezalel ben Uri or just Bezalel. What's ben Uri? What's going on over here? Number one. Number two, what's this? Re'u, have a look. See. See what? You know, how many times do we say, hey, pay attention, look. What's this Re'u, have a look? What's the idea behind that? And thirdly, why is it that the apparently the lineage is not sufficient for the prophet Rashi has to add in Miriam? What's the idea behind that? Okay, number one, why have so many Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur? Just say Bezalel or ben Uri, why ben Chur as well? Why have the idea of Re'u? And thirdly, why does Rashi add in another one, another factor called Miriam? So there's an incredible story, a beautiful story that I've said over, and I believe it fits in perfectly with this pasuk. There was a young man who lived in Tel Aviv, whose parents brought him up totally secular. He was a kibbutznik. His parents brought him up not only secular but anti-frum, anti-religious. He was the paradigm of secular Zionism, of the Israeli left winger, and he was a successful businessman. And every Friday afternoon when the business closed, he would go to his favorite pork store and stand outside and wait to buy pork. Yep. place to buy, pork. One day, there's a place called the White Elephant in Tel Aviv, and unfortunately there they sell dover acher, they sell pig meat, and he would stand outside and buy, hear what they call in Ivrit, basal lavan. Yep, white meat. One day, he was standing there in the heat, and it was boiling hot, one of the typical Tel Aviv sweaty evenings, and he's standing there with his car parked, and he's standing in line waiting to buy pork. Standing in line in the heat waiting to buy pork. And a story flipped through his head. He heard the story many years back, and he remembered that his mother once said the following story to one of her friends. The story went like this. His grandfather was taken from his home somewhere in Europe and taken to a concentration camp. And he had managed to survive a very long period of time, whether it was months or whether it was years, a very, very long period of time in a concentration camp. Every day was another battle. Every hour was another fight. This man survived hunger, he survived torture, he survived stress, he survived seeing his family killed, and he survived day by day, and he fought for his life every day to live another day. A couple of days before the Russians were there to liberate the camps, the Germans knew what was going on, and the Germans knew the days were numbered, and either they'll be taken in court and taken to Nuremberg, or they will be shot dead. So the Germans decided that they're going to have a little bit of fun before the Russians come in. They made roll call, and all the Jews were standing there emaciated, skinny, starving, and the Germans cooked up a dish of pig's meat in butter. And the steaming hot, succulent smelling piece of meat they put in front of, right in the middle of the roll call, and they called out one Jew. And they pulled him out, and they said to him, "Here is a piece of meat, eat it." And this fellow was starving. He hasn't eaten a piece of meat for years. Forget about a piece of bread he has hardly eaten. And he said, "No way, I'm Jewish, and I don't eat this food." So the German said to him, "You don't eat this food, we'll shoot you." So the Jew says, "Shoot me." The German says, "You don't understand. It's not just another roll call. This is the last roll call. We're running away. We're going. We're leaving you. If you survive this, that's it. That's it. You're free. You live. All you've been fighting for, everything you've been battling for, that is it. You can go home. You can start a family again. You can build your life again. This is it." And the man said, "There's a din of Kiddush Hashem. If there's a din of Shas Hashmad, if I am forced to do an Avera in front of many, many people, I am obligated to give up my life for the sake of sanctifying Hashem's name. I cannot do it." So German said, "We'll give you one last chance." The man opened up his shirt, and the German took him, and he shot him straight through the heart. And the man was a crumpled mess. That was it. He died. This man was this young man's grandfather. This man, standing outside a pork store, remembered that his grandfather died, not eat a piece of meat, and he is standing, a piece of pig, and he is standing, queuing up, in Tel Aviv, willing to pay for a piece of meat. No way he can do this. So he went home empty-handed, and he comes home and writes a new, where's the little pink tail, yeah? And he said, "No, I can't do this," and he told her the story. And from that time on, he changed his life. And that man became Rabbi Vallis. Now, Rabbi Vallis is executive director of the Arachim program in Eretz Yisrael. Now, if we do not see the end of the story, if we just saw this man shot dead a couple of days before liberation, what a chil Hashem. This is a man looking out for a Kodesh Baruch Hu's rotzen, and he gets shot dead like a dog. What a chil Hashem. However, if you look further, and look at the end of the story, realize that this man, allowing himself to be shot, has stopped thousands of people from marrying out, has caused many, many families to keep Shabbos. He has changed the lives of dozens and dozens of homes. This man, who allowed himself to be shot dead, has actually created the grandchild through this very story that is impacting the lives of thousands of people. Says Rabbi Elia, who was Chor? Chor was the son of Miriam. When the Jews wanted to serve the Egel, to create an ego. What did he do? There was one man from the entire millions of Jews who stood forward and said, no, this is wrong, you're crazy, you can't do this. You know what they did to him? They lynched him. They lynched him, they killed him. They killed him. What a chil Hashem. One man willing to stand up for Ratzon Hashem, willing to make a stand, and you lynch him? Where is Hashem? How can Hashem do such a thing? Says of El Elapia and Ra'u, have a look, see. Don't see the beginning of the story, see till the end. You know what happened over here? You know what happened? Chor, because of his action of Mesiras Nefesh, created a Bezalel. Ra'u, have a look. Bezalel ben Uri ben Chor. Chor created a Bezalel. Because of the Mesiras Nefesh of Chor, standing up for what's right, it looked over there as a terrible Chil Hashem, but ultimately it created the biggest Kiddush Hashem of Hashraas HaShchina, of the Shechina coming down to this world. Ru'u, have a look. Bezalel ben Uri ben Chor. Chor created Bezalel. That is the lesson of Bezalel Uri ben Chor. Says the Medrash a little bit further. The Medrash says, Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecho, Tani Porei Alochem, he said to Chor, I promise you that I will pay you back. Kol b'necho onu megadol mo'olam hazeh, all you children I will make great in this world. Shenema ru'u korah Hashem b'shem Bezalel. When Hashem said to Bezalel, we said to Chor, what reward you'll get, he said, Porei Alochem, I will pay you back. However, the Medrash carries on, and it says Miriam was also a great woman. Miriam had Yerushalmite, she didn't kill the children, as she was told to by Pari. Yeah, Vayori Lekin, they had fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ma not the Miriam Schoro, what schar did Miriam get? Says the Pasuk, says the Medrash, Chochma. She got Chochma. Shnema, like the Pasuk says, Hen Yiris Hashem hi Chochma. That Yiris Hashem creates Chochma. Hemid mimeno Betzalo, Betzalo came from her, Shohayo Chochom, Shnema, Vamalo Oisei Roach Lekin. Okay? So by Miriam, was a great-grandmother, and she created Chochma. Okay? Now, says the Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi, a beautiful piece. He said, if you look by Miriam, it says, what schar did she get? Chochma. Schar. Schar means reward. When it comes to Chor, what does it say? It doesn't say schar. It says, I will pay you back. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch has borrowed something and pay you back. What's the difference between schar and piroin? What's the difference between payment and owing? The way I understand it is, schar is there. Schar is there if I want to pay you. You know, if I pay you, I can pay you now, I can pay you tomorrow, I can pay you whenever. But it has not created an obligation, an inevitable obligation that has to be paid back immediately. Something that is going to have to be paid back as an absolute onus. I can pay out schar, you get schar, you know, get reward. I can pay a small reward, a big reward. You know, it's up to me how much I want to reward you. That's schar. I can reward Miriam a big reward. Perea means I owe you something that I have not entitled to minimize the schar. It is inevitable. I have to give you what you're entitled to. The marshal. A person builds a building. Okay? And he's there with a jackhammer, and he's breaking the concrete. You know, he's there drilling and drilling. There's two things. He's earning money, and he's building muscle. Okay? So he'll earn money. Whenever the boss wants to pay him back, wants to pay him for the work, he'll pay him. He goes broke, then he's done, right? But nobody can take away his muscles. Those muscles are inevitable. Perea, to pay back somebody, if Hashem owes you, you've got to pay back. That is inevitable. Schar is there. You want to take it when Hashem wants to give you now, later, different generation or something else. But perea is an ongoing obligation that cannot possibly be undermined. It is absolute. We'll have to look into this further, exactly the difference, but the difference is at this. Says the Pasuk, Bezalel ben Uri ben Chor lemat Yehuda. It does not mention Miriam. Why? Because the schar, the wisdom of Bezalel came from Miriam. That's schar. That's reward. But not necessarily that created Bezalel. Bezalel may or may not have had a connection with that reward. That did not create the soul. It put in the family wisdom. You can be wise. You can choose to grab onto that wisdom or not. However, Chor was a Perea. chor you're paying back. In other words, chor created a betzalel. It's inevitable that anything but betzalel can come out of chor. That is paying back. That is an absolute obligation. The pasuk talks about what created betzalel. It did not talk about what skills and what attributes the family had. It's talking about the creation of betzalel. Have a look. Betzalel was created by chor. That is the power of Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh is something that creates inevitable buildings. Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. Yeah, Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis. This is the Shir, the Tehillim, of building of a Beis Hamikdash for David. Ask the Medrash, who built the Beis Hamikdash? Was it David or was it Shlomo? Shlomo Melech built it. So why Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid? Answer the Gemara, because David was Moisa Nefesh to create the Beis Hamikdash. Although he never built it, he was Moisa Nefesh. So this still is not answered. So Mizmor Shir, this is the Shir of Chanukas, or Mizmor Shir, the Mesiras Nefesh of David. Still, who built the Beis Hamikdash? It wasn't David, it was Shlomo. So why talk about David building the Beis Hamikdash? Talk about the Mesiras Nefesh of David. Mizmor Shir of the Mesiras Nefesh, who built the Beis Hamikdash? Answer is, David's Mesiras Nefesh built the Beis Hamikdash. Beis Hamikdash is not built with stones. It's not built with foundations of rock. It is built with Mesiras Nefesh. And David put the Mesiras Nefesh, and therefore the Beis Hamikdash was built. It happened to be that Shlomo actually put the stones together. But the real building in this world is done with Mesiras Nefesh. The building blocks of who we are and how we survive as a nation, how we grow and strive, is only through Mesiras Nefesh. How much I'm willing to dedicate and push myself in order to have a Avodas Hashem. I want to tell you an amazing story. I'm going to change the name, if you don't mind, because I don't want anyone who hears this to know who I'm talking about. Fanny may not want to know. But my father had a secretary. A very, very fine man, a very honest man. Certainly not a person who's been to yeshivas, certainly not a person who was a big Talmud Chochem. A very honest, straightforward, fine, fine person. A real East End boy, you know, a real East End boy, very, very straightforward, no, nothing very sophisticated, but extremely straight. He had one daughter, and this daughter married somebody who became a big Rosh Hashiva in London. And not only that, all the grandchildren of Big Tamid HaChomim, but a very unique family, something special. So my father once asked him, how did you merit to have such a thing? How did you merit to have such a daughter who married, brought up such an amazing family? How did you merit to have such a thing? So he said that he was in the Second World War fighting with the British near the Suez Canal. And they were surrounded by Rommel. And they knew they were going to have roll call soon. And they were going to actually all put into line. And they said to him, you've got a Jewish name. For argument's sake, it's called him Cohen. Okay? So he said, if you have any dog collar Cohen, who knows what it can do to you? Hide it, and call yourself Smith. Call yourself Smith, what are you? They'll never find out, and that would be much safer. He said, if they ask you if I'm a Jew, I'm going to answer I'm a Jew, because I'm proud to be God's chosen nation. And I'm not hiding my name. So Rommel came, one by one. Nada! So I'm Smith. Nada! So he said, ask him, walked up to him, right in front of him. Nada! Cohen. Yuda, Jewish? Yeah. Nothing happened to him. He's going to prison of war camp, and he released after the war, and he moved to England, etc., etc. He said, I believe that the chush of being Mamoisa Nefesh in that moment, of standing up for Kiddush Hashem, yes, I'm Jewish. You want to do something about it, do it, but I'm not changing my religion. That's what created what's such a beautiful family. I thought that was the end of the story. 2 weeks ago when I was in London, the family was sitting there, and my father said, you know this story? I said, of course I know this story. And I added on another piece. He said, on my father's deathbed, he was mumbling something. So I put my ear right to my father's mouth, and my father said, Yuda, ya. That's what my father said, on his deathbed. In other words, according to Kabbalah, just before a person died, the Satan tries to make a person a Macharis Megadus. He tries to get the last second to make a person go off and to become Apocryphus. And on his deathbed, he says, Yuda, yeah. Jewish, yes. This was Mesiras Nefesh. That creates buildings. That creates a family. It's not through, you know, sophistication of you know, learning all the books of how to bring up children. That helps. But it's Mesiras Nefesh. Ultimately, you'll see it. Ra'u, you'll see it. Mesiras Nefesh creates wonderful things. Mesiras Nefesh goes deeper. Even for small things, the more you moisten Nefesh, the more it comes through. There's a beautiful story of Pesach Kron says over of a businessman from Luzern. I know the Yekkers, they wear talisim even before they're married. Some even wear talisim from the time they're three or four. Yeah, they wear talisim from when they're very young. The Sadim do as well. Okay, there's a different minhagim. There was one man from Luzern who had a business, and he involved his son in the business, brought his son into the business, and after a while he sent the son on a business trip. And the son went on a 5-hour journey to a certain place to strum up some business. And the father went to the son's room for some reason, and he noticed that his tefillin were taken, but he left his talis there. So the father wasn't sure whether he forgot it there or he left it there on purpose, because it's only a minute, you know, no, everyone wears a talisim, big deal. Obviously there's no shuls there, it's in Lucano, it's a middle place near the Italian border. And so the father went to the station, took the 5.5-hour trip to where the son was staying, knocked on the door of the hotel, saw the open door, saw his father, said, "What are you doing?" He said, "He forgot something. Did I forget papers? Did I forget my credit cards? What?" He says, no, "You forgot your talis." Gave him the talis, said, "I'm going to catch the train back." And he went all the way back, the other 5.5 hours back. That's a man that a minhag meant something to him. Rav Shimon Schwab said this over to Reb Lvovitz. Reb Lvovitz was the mashgiach of Kamenitz. I wonder what his brother, I think a brother or nephew, and probably a nephew. And he said his story over to him, and he said, "Look at this. Look how a person was admitting to Meis and Nefesh for a few days of Talis." Rav said, "You're making a mistake. This man was Meis and Nefesh for generations of Talis. You can be quite sure that this man will never ever leave a Talis behind again." Rabbi Pesach Kron followed up this story, and he asked the grandson about the story, etc. He said, "He won't believe it. My father, i.e. the one who left the talis behind, just came back now from Eretz Yisrael. He just came back to Switzerland from Eretz Yisrael. He brought all his grandchildren talisim." Now, that's Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh means if it's serious, if it means something to you, it's going to be stick in the family. If it's not, if it doesn't mean anything, it's not going to last. Ru'u, have a look. Take a look, Rabbi Yishai. The families of Mesiras Nefesh to do real things create beautiful families. The families who are just like paddling through life, you know, going with the stream, nothing much comes from them. That's Ru'u. Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur. Chur created a Betzalel. It goes a lot deeper. The Prophet says in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayimale Oisoi, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu filled him Ruach Elokim with the Spirit of Hashem, V'chochma with wisdom, V'shvuna with tvuna, with understanding, or v'daf and with knowledge, or b'chol malocha and every malocha and every work. Okay? What does this mean? Sorry? The Pasuk is in Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. So what does it say? The Pasuk says Hashem created, gave the Talmud Uri ben Chur, and he filled him with Ruach Elokim. What's Ruach Elokim? Ruach Elokim, as we described beforehand, was he was able to be mechabit to the Shemus. He was able to identify the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kabbalah, of how to create in this world a physical being from something totally spiritual. Incredible. Unbelievable Kabbalist, right? Carries on the Pasuk. And he was great with his hands. He could make silver and gold and this. It almost sounds strange. You know, this man was an unbelievable Makubal. You know what? And you should see how he can wire a plug. What a Talmud Chacham! And a great tailor. You know, okay, he's got to be practical, but he's talking about Ruach Elokim, B'chachma, B'shvuna, B'das, B'yimalei, so you fold him up. Yeah, and you know, the silver, whoa, he got an excellent shot. No, it just doesn't sound on the same league. Of course these things are important, but it doesn't sound on the same level of importance than B'yimalei, Ruach Elokim, that he could also do with silver and gold. It just doesn't seem right. Of course it's needed, but to put it in the same breath, as it were, it doesn't seem right. So there's a beautiful story that I read in Talle Oris, and a lot of others say bring it as well, from Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhinov, as we know, the first modern day yeshiva, yeah, not modern yeshiva, but first modern day yeshiva in Volozhin, called Ava Yeshiva, which is called the father of the yeshivas. And as you know, being a Rosh Yeshiva not only requires you to give a shir klali, not only requires you to do recruitment, but it also requires you the wonderful task of fundraising. So, he actually employed, besides himself fundraising, he employed a few people to go fundraising to the various cities and villages around to collect money. One of the fundraisers, who was a man who's bringing quite a bit of money, he came to Rav Chaim and he said to him, you know, till now I've been traveling around by public transport. Yeah, there's a wagon, you go to the wagon station, and you wait till Chaimka, the Balagola, decides to get on the thing, and finds that little Kretschner or somewhere, little village, till he's willing to schlep over there, and the horse is a bit tired, you know, and he's cold, so he's looking tomorrow, maybe the next day. I'm ineffective, I'm losing time, and he needs a company car. Yeah, he needs a company car. You know, he's a horse and carriage, with a little sign at the back, you know, if this car is doing anything illegal, yeah, please, you know, please send a smoke message to this number. But anyway, so he decided to use a company car, and Rav Chaim said, "You're right. It's going to be more time effective and actually bring in more money. Absolutely right. Fine." Last part of 2 months, he comes back to Rav Chaim and says, "Rav Chaim, you know, I've looked around and I've noticed that people that are dressed well earn much more money. I'm sitting there with my yeshiva shirt, shiny suit, my kvetchta hat." And people are standing there, you know, with the Hugo Boss suits and the Christian Dior tie. And it actually, you know, it cuts an image. You know, it overpowers the donors. They feel they've got to impress. These people are making much more money. I need to be kitted out the way, you know, these people are kitted out. I've got to be dressed properly. And Brian thought about it and said, absolutely. If it brings in more money, go for it. Okay? Fine. A few months passed, and Brian's looking through the ledgers. And he notices that there's one farmer who used to give a very large amount of money to yeshiva, zero. Haven't given a penny this year. Calls in the fundraiser, what's going on? He said, "Oh, I tell you this man, it's bad news. Terrible. This man used to give me money every year. I roll into his house, dressed nicely, with a company car, you know, outside, the engine purring, and he says, that's where my money goes to? My money goes to making look like dust came from Savile Row? Yeah, my money's coming. I've come here. You know, I'm supposed to be paying for the horse and carriage. I'm giving money to the yeshiva, not to the horse. Forget it. Get out of here. You know what? I'm even have charotta for the money I gave you till now. You've got to be very careful. I once got upgraded. I hired a car. I was fundraising, and I hired a regular small car, and that triple upgraded me. So once you've given me a Mercedes C-Class, okay, which is really great, beautiful car, right? Because didn't have an automatic car, so I'm upgrading to Mercedes C-Class. I thought to myself, imagine I'm rolling up, knocking on people's doors for money for the yeshiva, and I drive in with a car like that up in the driveway. You know, it's horrendous, terrible. You're never going to give me money. I said, no, I don't want this car. I want the oldest car you have. You know, so you have to wait then. So okay, I'll wait. I waited 2 hours until another, you know, the old Astra rolled in, and I took that. Yeah, they're looking at me from crazy. You understand? People don't understand this. So Chaim says, okay, next time you go to that person around that area, I want to come with you. He comes with him, knocks on this person's door. This farmer opens the door and he sees a God Lador standing there. He almost panics, almost faints. Come inside. He sits him down. And Chaim said, I want to show you a Pasuk in this week's Sedra. Pasuk says, V'imale oishirocha lekim b'chochma b'sfuna v'dashchom lochoi. Batala was flying. He knew Kabbalah. Unbelievable. Next book talks about Balasha Machshava. He said he can hammer in a nail well and he can actually do this and roll this. So what's going on here? Doesn't make sense. Says Rav Chaim, we have an right pshat in the Pasuk. Let's understand this. When a person gives money to yeshiva, where does he want the money to go to? To the cleaners? Maybe. Maybe yes, maybe no. To the food? Maybe. He wants to give the money to the Rosh Yeshiva's wages. He wants to give the money to the sporim. He wants to give the money to, you know, he wants to give the money to something real. So how do you do this? So he said the same thing happened in the Beis HaMikdash. Anyone who gave the gold or silver wanted to go to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. So how did you decide that some money goes to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, some goes to the Heichel, some goes to the Chotzer? How do you decide which part of the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan it should go to? Very, very difficult. Says a Pasuk, Vayimala Oisroa Chalakim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him with unbelievable understanding and sensitivity. Valachshav Machshavos, and he was able to understand the thought process. Lasos, what to do with every Zav, Kesev, and Achoshes. Every piece of gold, silver, or copper came into his hand and looked at it, and was able to identify what love and dedication went into this gold. If a person gave a lump of gold for the sake of being mechaber the Kodesh Baruch Hu, to give in cover to Hashem, to give honor to Hashem, that went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The person gave a lump of gold because they are, well, what can I do? You know, I'm embarrassed not to. Or he gave it because I want a lump of cover for it, then that was put somewhere else. If a person gave a piece of silver because ultimately that was what I really want to give to Kodesh Baruch Hu, that went to our higher places. Lesser went somewhere else. But Lashay Machshavos, not Peshat, he knew how to hammer the gold and make it into something nice. He knew exactly where to use every piece of gold, silver, and copper, which part of the Mishkan to use according to the amount of Mesiras Nefesh and love that went into the giving of the donor of this piece of metal. That's Peshat, Lashay Machshavos. Says Rav Chaim, I know what love you have for Torah, and I know what love you have for mitzvahs. I can assure you that the money that you give doesn't go towards a horse's food. It goes towards the actual learning in the yeshiva. Somebody's doing it for the covered and he has no choice. That goes towards feeding the horse or buying the clothes. And that's how, we don't have a bit solid today, but in Shemayim you can be quite sure that's what happens. In other words, Rabbi Yisrael, let's identify what's going on over here. Not only does the creator, the builder of the Mishkan, was actually built from the Siris Nefesh, i.e. the Tzal was built by the action of Chor, the Mishkan itself was built according to how much Mesiras Nefesh each person put into its donation. The more Mesiras Nefesh, the more dedication, the more valuable with regard to where it was put inside the Mishkan was that piece of silver or gold. The more the Mesiras Nefesh, the more value that piece of gold or silver had, and the more it was put up in its levels of Kedusha where it was used in the building. This is how Mesiras Nefesh makes a difference. Not only creates a Mishkan, but how the value of where you actually put into the Mishkan, that is also built with Mesiras Nefesh. The Sephona adds a beautiful understanding as well. The Sephona says, in the beginning of the parasha, it says, in the next parasha, the next parasha, Pekudei, it makes a reckoning, okay? And this is a spreadsheet, okay? We're making a spreadsheet, right, Gershon? We're making a spreadsheet over here. We're accounting exactly where all the money went to. You're dealing with a lot of money, right? And you have to make sure the money wasn't siphoned off in some kind of a Swiss bank account. You've got to make sure that actually the money went to the right thing. Says the apostle, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. This is a reckoning of the Mishkan. Now I'm actually giving you reckonings. What do you expect? Line 1. Title, Reckoning of the Mishkan. Line 2, amount of gold, amount of silver, etc., etc. Eilef kudah Mishkan, Mishkan Eidus, Hashapot Hashem Apir Moshe. Okay, now. So this is the reckoning. Says the Pasuk, Ubetzalel ben Uri ben Chur ben Mati Yehuda, and Betzalel, the son of Uri, the son of Chur ben Mati Yehuda, again, Ofer Eskal Shetiva Hashem Es Moshe, did everything Hashem told Moshe to do. 1 second. We're dealing with reckoning here. We're dealing with reckoning of the Mishkan of Moshe. How's Betzalel stepping here again? Betzalel did it, very nice. But what's got to do with the reckoning? What's it got to do with how much was used? Why bring Betzalel in here again? Betzalel created it. But what's this again? And Betzalel and Uri B'chor made it. But that's not dealing here with the creation of it. We're dealing here with the reckoning of it. Since when he put on the spreadsheet, and this is a spreadsheet of this and this company. Oh, and by the way, Betzalel was the one who was managing director. It's not important. This is a company, and talk about immediately the amount. Why bring Betzalel into it? Says a Sephorno, a beautiful piece, says a Sephorno, you should just know that the reason why it's brought over here is to teach us a message. That this gold and silver was far more valuable than any other gold and silver used in history. The reckoning of this gold and silver may have been in monetary amounts not that great, but the amount of time it lasted, it outlasted any single gold and silver ever used. Why? He says the Mishkan was never destroyed. The Mishkan never got destroyed. Not only that, there was never a time where it needed bedek habayis. It never needed any repairs. The Mishkan retired. It never ever got destroyed. Why? Because who made the Mishkan? It was made by Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur le Mati Yehuda. Because Bitzadon Urichu worked on it. I'm just telling you, says the Pasuk, this gold and silver had a whole different value than regular gold and silver. Therefore, even though we're going to actually work out the monetary value with regard to the weight, we should just know the amount of time it endured was actually completely different because Bitzadon Urichu did it. In other words, the amount of Mesiris Nefesh put in to this creation of the Mishkan gave it endurance that it lasted forever and ever. Says the Sephorna, you should just know that the first base of Migdosh was created by Jews, but they had foreign workers there from Tzur. Yeah, they had foreign workers. Therefore, says the Medrash, it was able to become destroyed. And it needed better kabayis. It had the Shechina, but it was able to be destroyed and needed to be repaired constantly. The second base of Migdosh didn't have the Shechina. It was almost fully made by foreign workers and it was destroyed. Something that is made with Mesiris Nefesh can never, ever be destroyed. And therefore, says the Apostle, when I'm talking about the reckoning, don't think the reckoning is for a short period of time, it was forever and ever and ever. The famous Gemara about Reb Chiya wanted to spread Torah in Klal Yisrael. What did he do? He planted flax, he weaved them, he made nets out of them, he trapped animals, he took their animals, he shechted them, he gave them food to poor people, he took them and he made them into skins, and he wrote Torah on them, and he taught the Torah each one to different children. Ask the Marsha, what are you wasting his time for? You know, if I want to write a sefer, I don't go along and plant trees, yeah, and then cut down the trees, and then make paper, and then get a few ink. I just go along and buy paper, and that's it, finished. Why? What's he doing all this for? Says the Marsha, because he wanted Torah to endure forever. And the only way for Torah to continue forever is from the very source, from the very roots it starts off with the Mesiris Nefesh and dedication to the right purpose. That's right, from the very planting of the seeds, it had to be done with Mesiris Nefesh and it continued forever. There's one wall. There was one wall that has never been destroyed and Mesiris never left it. That's the Kosel Maravi. Can you imagine? Let's just think about this. Can you imagine what the Arabs, what a moral slap on the back it would be for the Arabs if, in the time of the Jordanians, for example, they blew up the Chur of the Shul, right? The Behuda Chosid Shul, they blew up the Shul. If they would have blown up the Kosel, unbelievable! Wow, this is a Jewish site. What an unbelievable, wonderful thing to do. And you know what? They can't. You know why? Because it was made with Mesiris Nefesh. The Aniyim were the ones who built the Kosel Maravi. And the Kosel Maravi is built by the Aniyim with a hard dedication. It can never, ever be destroyed. They can do whatever they want. They can put an atom bomb underneath it. Nothing will happen. It will never be destroyed. Because that is the Pasuk of Mesiris Nefesh. Explain the Sephorna. That's from next week, in the next Pasuk. Kol azov ha'osel melacha. All the gold that was used for the melacha, b'chol melachas ha'kodesh, was this amount. What's Peshat? Explain to Sephorna. This amount of gold was minuscule compared to the amount used in the first base and second base of Migdosh. So why is it that the Shechina was in the Mishkan and not the first and second base of Migdosh? The answer is to prove the point. The Mishkan was built by Bitzal with the Mesiris Nefesh. Even the small amount of gold, Hashem said, not interested in the gold. Liyah Keshev, Liyah Zav, Num Hashem. It's all mine, but it'll never be destroyed. Later on, with the base of Migdosh, had huge amounts of gold. It does not attract the Kodesh Baruch Hu, they are destroyed. That is the idea. The idea of Mesiris Nefesh creates a Bitzalel. It creates a building. It creates a Mishkan, number one. Number two, that second idea was that even the value of how the Mishkan was built according to levels of Mesiris Nefesh. How you want to value a building, how you want to value the creation you've done is only by the input of Mesiris Nefesh. And third of all, the how long it's going to endure for, how long it's going to last for. This particular Mesiris Nefesh is based on the amount of Mesiris Nefesh you have. The building that he built is built based on Mesiris Nefesh. One last point and we end. The Rechem HaKadosh says, Kol Zahav Ha'osel Melacha B'chol Melachas HaKadosh. It's a very, very strange prophet. The prophet says, all the gold used for the Melacha to build the Melachas HaKadosh, Vayihi Zavatnufa, and the gold was, why talk about Kol Azov, then Vayihi Zavatnufa, the gold was, what is double loshen? Says the Rechem HaKadosh, Kol Hazahav Ha'osel Melacha. All the gold given was used in the works of the Mishkan. What's the idea behind that? So he says, beautiful piece. He says, normally when a person gives a lump of gold to build, to give a kli, yeah, the amount that he'll actually come out with when the kli is ready made is a lot less than the original weight that he gave it originally. The person wants to make a candelabra, a silver candelabra. So take a piece of silver, and the amount you started off with, and the end product of the candelabra is going to be a lot less, because there's filings, and there's dead ends, and there's... You know, that's what happens. Here, it was supernatural. The amount of gold given, and the end product was the same weight as it started off beforehand. Why? Why? I want to add, because Mesiris Nefesh can never ever get lost. If you put Mesiris Nefesh in, and you work towards giving your gold with a full heart, even nature cannot knock that away. Even nature will work within the rules of Mesiris Nefesh that Mesiris Nefesh can never get lost. Rachmana Litzlan, very, very sad. There are many, many times, unfortunately, where people have a sick relative in the family, or they had a friend who's suffering, and they daven, and they cry, and they do mitzvahs, and they do unbelievable Mesiris Nefesh for the life, to save this person's life. And unfortunately the person slips away. And he's Nifta, and he's still, what a waste. Who knows? The Teretz is Chas V'Sholem, Chas V'Sholem. Mesiris Nefesh never ever gets lost. Even if it's natural sugar loss, it won't get lost. And that's the message of V'Yakum B'Kudei. V'Yakum B'Kudei is the understanding how a man can be built with Mesiris Nefesh, how a building is valued according to how much Mesiris Nefesh is put into it, how something is endured by the amount of Mesiris Nefesh you put in, and how Mesiris Nefesh works in supernatural ways. This is the parasha, and Be'ez Hashem, we put in our Mesiris Nefesh, we should certainly be Chazak, Chazak, Benis Chazak.